Welcome to Money Isn't Scary, a podcast for women to explore our fears around money and inspire each other to be financially empowered. I'm Megan Dwyer, and I'm making it my personal mission to remove the taboo around money and help women rewrite their stories so they can stop staying small and begin to live life on their terms. In this show, we get real and uncomfortable as we unpack our beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors that aren't serving us anymore. I can't wait for you to join me on this journey, so let's dive in. Hi, you guys. Welcome to another episode of the Money Isn't Scary podcast. I'm Megan Dwyer. Today, I'm chatting with Meg LaFauve, the Oscar-nominated screenwriter for the Disney Pixar film Inside Out. This conversation is just incredible. It was so cool to be able to talk to Meg and learn more about the inner workings of a movie that has had such an impact on me and my parenting journey. As I say in the episode, I watched Inside Out for the first time when I was pregnant with my now 8-year-old son. And I just love the way the movie, as really the first of its kind, brings emotional intelligence and self-awareness mainstream. And now, 8+ years later, I watch the movie with my kids, and it's just unbelievable how much it resonates with them. The message of the movie, to let people be brave enough to sit with their sadness, is more challenging for parents to get than kids because they haven't yet had the decades of conditioning telling them that sadness is bad. It's wild. I am so excited to share this conversation with you all. Meg is just so cool and so down to earth and so wise, and she shares so much of her innate wisdom with us in this episode, which I'm so grateful for. So before we get into the episode, here's a little bit more about Meg. Meg LaFauve is an Oscar-nominated writer and Peabody Award-winning producer. She was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for co-writing the script for Pixar's Inside Out. She wrote the script for Pixar's The Good Dinosaur, which was nominated for a Golden Globe. In addition, she wrote the story for the MCU live-action feature Captain Marvel and wrote the script for the Netflix Cartoon Saloon's My Father's Dragon, which was nominated for 2 Annie Awards. She has taught at AFI and served as co-chair of the Graduate Producers Program at UCLA's School of Film and Television, where she taught master-level story and development classes for over 7 years. And in our conversation today, Meg and I talk about the importance of learning how to embrace our inner anger, especially as women, and to learn to set boundaries. We talk about lava and the beauty of moving towards it instead of running from it. We talk about the power of self-awareness and identifying emotions to make shifts in your life. We talk about parenting with emotional intelligence and so much more. You guys can find more from Meg by checking out her podcast, The Screenwriting Life, which she co-hosts with Lorian McKenna. And it's really about the act of creativity and what goes into that. And no, you don't have to be a screenwriter to listen to it. I've listened to it several times, and it's really about life lessons and how we incorporate that into our creative lives on a daily basis. You can also go check out the Facebook page for her podcast as well, The Screenwriting Life. And of course, go check out Inside Out 2 when it comes out in theaters this June. It comes out the same weekend as my younger son's birthday, so we're already planning a trip to go see it. All right, you guys, without further ado, I am so excited to share my conversation with the amazing Meg LaFauve. Enjoy. Hi, Meg. Welcome to the Money Isn't Scary podcast. Thank you for being here today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So I reached out to you when I heard you on another podcast, and I just loved how open and honest you are about not only your experience working on Inside Out, but in your personal life as well, and especially as a mom. This podcast is about supporting women and helping them to create a healthy relationship with money, which I have learned through lots of growing pains and tears, is directly correlated with our relationship with ourselves. In the past, money has always been a topic that I think women often avoid because we have absorbed these cultural messages that tell us that we're too emotional and therefore we're not good or we're not responsible with money. And my message through this podcast is to kind of turn all of that upside down. I believe that our emotions, all of them,
good, bad, indifferent are superpowers, and we need to learn how to embrace them, express them, and let them guide us on this journey. And I thought, hey, there's not a better example out there of expressing that message than in the movie Inside Out. So I am honored to be talking with you right now.
Thanks for having me, and I'll be here for all the incredible creative people who made that movie happen.
Yes. Thank you. I watched Inside Out for the first time when I was pregnant with my oldest son, who is now turning 8. So believe it or not, so that was 2015. I thought maybe, at the time it was the fact that I was pregnant, but that movie just touched parts of me that I think I had forgotten about, or maybe I had kind of shoved aside. And I don't know. I feel like maybe it was Bing Bong that really did it for me. But I just rewatched recently the movie with both of my kids, who are now 7 and 5, and I lost it again. I got super emotional for completely different reasons this time, and I think it's because it was just such a great portrayal of our real human experiences, and I as a parent now can relate to both Riley's perspective and her parents' perspective. So I would love to just start by asking, how did you get even started with the movie? What was the original concept of it, and why? Because I think it's really the first movie to ever bring the experience of emotions so mainstream.
True, it's true. I mean, the movie is Pete Doctors. He is the director from Pixar who created the movie. Pete Doctor is pretty amazing. He did Up and
Yeah.
he did Souls, and I mean we go on and
Oh.
on. Just a human being with an incredible imagination. I came in, so at Pixar you draw the movie in storyboards many, 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 many times. You have probably 8 full screenings where you show the movie to employees and you get lots of notes. And it takes about a 3 to 5 year process. And Pete had already pitched this idea to be his next movie. From what he's told me, it came from his daughter when she was very young, would meet people at the front door and tap dance for them and very full of joy. She just loved herself and she loved the world and she loved spreading joy. But then when she turned 11, she kind of got very remote, got very shy, and he had a great photo of her with her hair in front of her face, kind of turning away from the camera. And, his pitch was, "What happened to my daughter's joy? I want to go in her head and find out." He also talked
Wow.
a lot when I first met him about that feeling of your ch losing your child as they grow, right?
Yeah.
Which you can see at the end of Act Two in the dump as Joy's holding memories that are turning to dust and blowing away, right? They're being forgotten. And where is that little child that he knew that came to the front door and tap danced? And when I came on, so they had done all of their research into emotions. I think they started with something crazy like 25 emotions, but he had
Yeah.
worked it, including like Freudenschoit or something. He had worked it down to the 5 emotions that he wanted, and he knew some places he wanted Joy to go when she went out into the mind, Dream Productions and some fun places. But he didn't have a story yet. The story was not working. They had paired her with fear. And Pete just couldn't find anything he wanted to say about fear. So when I came on, I really came on as a writer to help him find the story with all of these incredible pieces that he had. And we worked and worked. And there's a wonderful video of him taking a walk, because when he gets stuck, he takes a walk. And he's very, very scared that he's going to get fired. Like, he's like, that we should have a movie by now. Because creativity is vulnerability. That is part of being a creative artist, is that you must face your vulnerability. And whether you can find a way to be comfortable with it or not, you have to accept it and be in it. That is, any act of creation or manifestation is going to have that in it. And I'm sure that involves money as well. That's just part of money is part of this fear that he has, right? They've spent a lot of money,
Yeah.
and they don't have a story yet.
And it's so emotional. He's getting all worked up because of it, right?
And it's I hope Disney Plus puts it on the DVD extras, because it's a wonderful video of him moving through his vulnerability in terms of, okay, what am I, instead of moving away from what scares him and makes him feel vulnerable, he's moving towards it. so that he can know himself better and know what story he's trying to tell, which is also an act of creativity you have to do and remind yourself over and over that your job is to move toward. I have a podcast called The Screenwriting Life, which is all about writing and the life of being a writer, not just from the craft, but from the actual trying to live it. And we call it lava. You know, it's the stuff inside of you that feels like it's going to burn you up. Pete's a genius at moving right towards that. Most people can't. He can. And he's talking on the video about, well, what am I afraid of? Okay, well, I'm afraid I'm gonna get fired, and then I'm gonna lose my house, and he's just moving through. Okay, what else is gonna happen? Well, I'm not gonna get to go to work every day. Well, what will happen if I can't get to go to work every day? Well, I'm gonna miss the people more than the place. Well, why am I gonna miss the people? Well, because we had a lot of good times. He's just thinking it through. He's dropping deeper and deeper. I'm gonna really miss the good times we had. And then he suddenly realizes, well, I'm gonna miss them because we've been through things together. And they went through two deaths in the company. The Joe Ramph was one of the original creators of Pixar, died in a car accident, and Steve Jobs died, and they all kind of came together to be with each other in that loss. And suddenly he realizes, oh, it's sadness. I want to talk about sadness, and that sadness isn't something to move away from. It's something that can actually connect you together. And he came to me and told me that, and I was like, Pete, that could change the world. And he was like, don't ever say that again, because it's too much pressure on a creative person to think about that. And then it was my job to say, okay, well, then what's the story? Part of that story then means sadness has to be on the journey with joy. She's not somebody we can go find, because if you want the message of the movie to ask people to be brave enough to be with their sadness, then we as creators are going to have to be brave enough to let her be on the movie and to let ourselves be sad. And I remember saying, Pete, at the end of this movie, we're going to have to let it be super sad, because that's the point of the movie. And can we do that? This is a big giant Pixar movie. And we pitched it, and John Lasseter was like, I want to cry right there. So they understood what Pete was going for. And then my job as a creative is to take that beautiful idea he has, and then the knife edge you walk as a creative writer is, my job is to pull the movie out of him. It's his movie, and manifest it with him on the page. And then the artists come in and start manifesting in the boards, and many, many artists come in as a part of that process. But I also have to bring myself into it. I can't write unless I personally have a connection to it, unless it's personally digging into my own lava, unless it's very makes me feel vulnerable too. That's where you get the good emotional stuff. And it's funny, we had to write the first version of the movie very, very fast. And I literally had maybe 3 hours to write the scene where Riley comes home after running away to her parents. And I think because I had to do it so fast, all of the normal blocks of overthinking and shoving stuff away that our brains do, or escaping into a cookie or whatever it was I was going to do, I couldn't do. I didn't have time. And so I just wrote it. And it wasn't until we were in the screening inside with the employees watching the movie that I and Riley basically, especially in this early draft, says to her parents, you want me to be happy, but I'm not. And I suddenly realized, with like a full body realization, oh my gosh, that's what I wanted to say when I was 11 years old to my mom.
That's what every kid wants to say.
And I just was like, oh my God, I felt so vulnerable. Like, I literally felt like I was naked in the thing
Yeah, but
screening.
it's so relatable. It's like what feels so personal is so universal.
Yeah, and that's as a creative, you have to go to the more specific personal you get, the more it feels like the human condition. It's very hard to get to, because your brain does not want you to go there. It feels very dangerous. The survival instinct kicks in and all kinds of stuff. But it was a very powerful experience. And it's funny, because some people really cry and feel broken up over Bing Bong and the loss of Bing Bong, which means their childhood and that innocence and the wonder. And other people are like me, and it's really about finally speaking your truth, and that as a child or as a woman, we don't have to be happy all the time, that there are various wonderful, beautiful parts of ourselves. And the other little link to that is, and as a creator, I knew that Joy was very unlikable if she was just doing this on her own. It feels almost egomaniacal to that Joy just wants to drive. So where did Joy get that? Where did she get that call to action? Where did she learn that she's supposed to keep Riley happy? Which is why you have the scene with mom, who sits down on the sleeping bag and says to Riley after they've moved, "Thank you so much for being our happy girl. You know, it's been so hard on your dad, and we so appreciate that you've stayed happy." Well, that's messaging coming in to Riley and Joy, stay happy. Here's the marching orders, stay happy. And it was really hard to get through because people were very afraid that mom was unlikable. And I was like, that is every parent in the world. Like, we all do it. It's just a survival instinct as a parent. You just want your kid to be happy, often not for them, but for you. And we all do it, and we all will have to come to confront that, but also know we're not alone, that we all do this. I mean, I wrote this, I pushed this, and then in the screening with my son, who at the time was maybe eight, when Riley says, "You want me to be happier, but I'm not," he leans over to me and he goes, "Well, I know what she's talking about." And I was like, "Jesus Louise," like,
You're like, thanks. Yeah.
it's something we do, you know? So that's where, for me, the movie really, that and Sadness with Bing Bong and his rocket was very personal to me, because I learned that from my children's preschool, which was all about emotional intelligence, and that your job as a parent is to allow them to have their emotions, not try to shut it down or fix it or change it. Your job is to allow your child to have that emotion and help them identify it so they can learn what this feeling is inside. So if your kid's block structure got knocked down in preschool, your job as a parent is to sit beside them and not say, "Well, let's rebuild it. It's okay. You weren't working it very long. We can fix it." That's not your job, because then you're telling the child that their emotion is null and void and shouldn't be there. And
Right. It's
now you don't have,
dismissive.
it's very dismissive of their experience. Instead, you say, "Wow, you're really mad. Is that, are you mad?" "Yes, I'm mad," right?
Right,
And I
right,
go
right.
ahead, you'd be mad too if you worked on something on the computer all day and then somebody wiped it. Like,
Of
you would be mad.
course.
It's okay. And then if you sit with them and say, "You're really mad," you'll see the emotion shift. And there's usually an emotion underneath anger. Anger's there as a protective device. And it's then, oh, now they're getting very sad. And you identify, are you, oh, wow, you're really sad. I am, I'm really sad. And if you just allow them to sit in their sadness, it does move through. And then they stand up and toddle off and they're totally fine. And so that experience I had at that preschool, I put into that moment with Sadness and Bing Bong, that Joy wants to go. She's trying to fix the problem. She's trying to distract him. She's trying to do anything she can to get past this uncomfortable moment. And Sadness just sits down and says, "You're really sad. You had great adventures with that rocket." Like, she's acknowledging the sadness. She's defining it for him. And then she lets him cry. And then he stands up and says, "Okay, let's go." So those are very personal moments that I brought from being a mother, from going to this preschool, from my own life experience. And that really is the trick of being a creative person, is bringing that in and letting that be part of the soup that's bubbling with a lot of different people.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so, like I said, just so relatable. You just touched on so many things that I wanted to talk about. But the first thing you mentioned, you were talking about sadness, right? And just how the importance of having sadness along for the journey, right? Because it's all part of the experience. What do you think about, again, we live in this culture right now that's like good vibes only, right? And I feel like it's so detrimental for parents and for kids. And it relates to that kind of Riley's parents being like, there's our happy girl. Like, just be happy, just be happy. It's just pushing happy. I feel like we need to work our way through that. And I think that it's, again, it's kind of like another big cultural, I don't know, thing working against us, right? It's telling us that like we should be this way and there's something wrong with us if we're not, right? I know when I had my, after I had my second son, I really struggle with postpartum depression. And I remember people just telling me, like, oh, it's okay. Like, you taught all these coping mechanisms. Like, just go have a glass of wine, go watch TV, watch some fun
Find something.
show, find something that's just a distract, just that'll make you feel better, that'll make you happy. But it's like, maybe all I need right now, and this is the other point that you mentioned, I just want to feel validated right now. I am going through for a rough time right now, and I just want somebody to tell me that what I'm going through is normal, that it's hard. And you can't always find that, right? So maybe sometimes you need to find that yourself, but I think that's a really common universal experience.
But it's a common universal experience to want to fix it for somebody, for when your
Yeah,
friend
true.
or relative is sad or down or having a problem, we immediately start throwing solutions at them, which is about regulating ourselves, honestly.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
about, we've become dysregulated over their emotion, And women often women or empaths, because of course men can be empaths too. This is super hard to do, because we're tuning in to their emotions and we're trying to fix it to get them on stable ground. But it does invalidate their experience, especially for children. It's basically saying what you're experiencing isn't true. That really starts to bifurcate you inside,
Right.
to the point that, when I work with women writers, a lot of my challenge is that, and not just women, but predominantly women writers, a character is driven by want, and women don't even know what a want feels like in their body.
I know. We can't
Because
even identify it.
no, we can't even identify it because we've been trained to make sure we know what everybody else wants and what everybody else needs, right? And if you get way too far away from your own experience, you don't know yourself. You don't know what you
Yeah.
want. Is this your choice or somebody else's choice that you made long ago? And that it's a scary road to go down because it feels like, oh my gosh, the ice is cracking under your feet. But it isn't, of course. It's actually solidifying, but it doesn't feel that way. Your survival brain will kick in. But yes, women especially are very much taught to put the center of themselves outside of themselves. I felt it happen in meetings. Often I would suddenly realize, oh wait, I'm in my head, I'm just more worried about what they think and what they are doing and what they think of me than I am about what's happening right now to the story, and stay with the story and put my center back into myself. And I would have to like breathe and feel my feet and get back in my body, right? Because my survival instinct is to make sure everybody's happy, and not disappoint anybody.
Of course, that's a big one for me is this fear of disappointing people.
Yeah, I don't know if it's culturally taught to women, if it's where you and I share similar parents, but boy, or I'm just genetically, honestly, sometimes I think it's the chemicals in your head that could come from 100 years ago and
Yeah.
some woman in your ancestry chemically shifted, and we all have been shifted over.
It's
And sometimes
probably
it doesn't
all
even
of the
matter like
above.
why it's there, right? It's there,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
And often when something comes up that when you're trying to change or shift or grow or evolve or just think about what you want or even small things or just be present in your body and in your life, often your survival instinct does kick in and it gets very, very loud. And it's fight, flight, and then the new freeze. And the new one is appease. That's the new one, which is what we all really need to think about, that appeasement is a survival instinct.
Absolutely.
And
It
those can
makes you
take.
feel safe.
Absolutely, because if they're happy, you're safe,
Right,
right?
right.
But it's not authentically coming. It's not an authentic impulse. It's a survival impulse. But those survival impulses, I guess my point is that when it comes up, it's just being with it, not trying to change it, because they really do think they're saving your life. That those impulses have been created by you probably in childhood, and they did their job as a child. They did their job. You survived it. You're here. But I often find that those impulses that saved you as a child really can crush your dreams as an adult. Like, for example, mine was disappear. I just disappeared into books and good grades. But if I want to be a writer, I can't disappear. I have to do the opposite. So when those voices would come up and be warning me, don't go in and pitch this idea. Oh my God, everyone's going to hate you and they're all going to laugh at you when you walk out because you're such an idiot and you're going to be seen. And I just take a breath and say to that thing, thank you. Thank you. You're trying to save my life. Thank you. Thank you for driving right now. I hear you, but I want you to step aside and just sit in a chair and watch because we're not gonna die. As a matter of fact, we're probably gonna live. So just sit down. I used to imagine a little red chair in my head. And I did this before I came onto the movie. And just do it anyways, right? You do it anyways. And I find when I do those things and I push that lava, towards that fear, towards that dream, towards that want that has a lot of resistance, a lot of the stuff that I do to avoid or dull down or numb out, I don't need. So that cookie, that glass of whiskey, shopping, oh my God,
Oh,
please,
that's
wasted
I talk about
shopping,
that a lot.
nightmare.
The retail therapy, right?
I don't do that as much. So it's just ultimately knowing yourself can be scary, but it's ultimately the most powerful thing you can do.
Yeah, and I think, in order to do anything good, in order to try something new, to do something different, to, achieve a goal, it's you have to face those big scary emotions. And it's okay. It's okay. I've learned that it's okay for them to be scary. Like, I keep trying to tell myself, like, well, you shouldn't be scared. Like, why are you scared about this? You know, and like beating myself up for feeling upset and then feeling upset about feeling
Being
upset. You know
upset. Yeah.
what I
First,
mean?
it just is. It just is. And it's ancient and old and wise in you, and it's scared. It might not be right because it might be living back when you were five and it doesn't know you grew up and that you're 40 years old and that things have changed. It doesn't know that. It doesn't know time. So it's just like sending off the warning signals, but you're in charge of the console, right? It's not in charge of you. And you can talk to it and ask it to step aside. My husband and I joke that I have a Viking in me. And boy, you do not want that Viking coming out swinging with a club. And it very rarely comes out, but boy, when it comes out, it's roaring. And it's a defense mechanism. It's a boundaries. It's overexerting. My anger turns into a Viking, and it is overexerting the boundary. Anger in itself is not bad. And women are taught that we're not supposed to be angry. My friend's daughter, for her birthday, that she said, "What theme do you want?" And she said, "I'm gonna be anger." And I was like, "I love her so
From the
much."
movie, I
Yeah,
love that.
she dressed up as anger. And of course, little girls can be angry. Why can't they be angry? They
Right.
have to be angry to know boundaries. How
Right.
else do you know a boundary in your life?
And you're so right. I think, you know, you were saying like before that not only are women kind of expected to, well, we have this expectation in the world that we are going to meet everybody else's needs and wants, but we have to do it with a smile on. And we because I mean, you know, I don't know. What was the role model? Wilma Flintstone, right? Like this is what we see growing up, and that was what's just sort of passed on. So it's almost as if you're not anything but happy, then whoa, get out of her way. But it is completely normal. And I love that. I love that a little girl is stepping into that inner fierceness because she's not buying that bullshit that the culture is selling
She's
us.
not buying it. She is not buying it. And I hope the little girls are being taught to use their voices and their boundaries, because boy, they better, right?
Yeah, that's what you want.
I just saw a movie that, this is of course a ongoing, it will be a life journey for me to unlearn things. And I just saw a movie that now I use the character as, well, what would Nora do? Because she was so, I don't know if you've seen the movie Past Lives,
No, I
but
haven't.
it's so powerful. It's very, very subtle. It's super subtle. And I didn't really even realize till the end an element. She's doing many, many things as a creator, the writer, director. But it is a woman's point of view of a love triangle, not the men's. And Nora, as a character, as a woman, her number one goal is not to make the men feel better. Number one goal
Good.
is her own wants and needs. And she doesn't get shrill about it. She doesn't yell about it. She doesn't have to defend herself with a lot of vocal. It just is.
Or
And
fear what other people's response or
no,
reaction to
she's
that would
not.
be.
And to the point that sometimes in the movie, I get very uncomfortable that she's not making the men feel okay about themselves. And I had to look at
Interesting.
myself and say, wait a minute, why should she?
Of course,
It's
yeah.
her job to make the men feel better about themselves. And okay, it's not. She's not lying to them. She's choosing her own life, dreams, desires, wants, and manifestations. And that's why they love her. So why would they ask her to not do that? Right? It's so sophisticated and such a beautiful representation of women and what a woman who's standing in her own power looks like on screen. And I don't think we see it very often,
We
right?
don't see it enough, that's for sure.
Because honestly, and I say this with love to all of my male cohorts, it's written by men, and it is a specific experience to be the woman who's not following the tapes, the stuff that we're supposed to do. She's not trying to make sure to fix it, to make sure they're okay, to not disappoint them. She's focused on her life and what she's here to manifest. It's
Yeah,
amazing.
that's
It's amazing.
awesome. I'm gonna go watch it for sure. It's
Because if
because
someone's looking for a role model,
Yeah, well, I mean, you just need this inspiration too, because I feel like even now, you know, I'm in my 40s and I still find myself getting nervous to have difficult conversations. And I'm like, why can't I feel like I can voice how I feel? Or why do I feel like I have to shove it down because it's going to please somebody else if I just don't say what I really want to say in the
right, because it's your
situation?
survival. And it's true. I mean, we also have to acknowledge that women being direct can be accused of being a bitchy. Women of having boundaries can be accused of a lot of things. The expectation is that you will appease. The expectation is that you will please and make sure everybody's okay. But it is possible, especially this new generation coming up. I don't feel that they're as deeply embedded in that as a survival instinct. And of course, I am not saying that I am an empath. I love people. I love connecting with people. It's why I'm a writer. I love human beings and all of their messiness, and I love their messiness most of all. So I'm not saying that it's not okay and good and beautiful to give and connect and want to support other people, help other people. All that's beautiful. I just think sometimes it can get out of whack, so it actually becomes our identity and it becomes who we are in terms of just it's just out of balance. It's out of balance. And honestly, sometimes that's too much to ask of the other person, right? The other person doesn't want responsibility for your happiness. Like, that's not
That's a
their
big job.
either. That's a big job. Like, when I have friends who are basically passively asking me to be responsible for their happiness, it's like, well, but that's not my job. How could I ever do that? Like,
You feel
I'm
the
not
weight of
you.
that too. I
It's a
mean,
weight, you
it's
know?
a weight. You need to take care of yourself. And then you feel like you, and I guess,
And I
mom
can't know
saw
you the way you know yourself, right? Like, so have you ever listened to someone's dreams where you're like, I don't know what all these metaphors mean? It's so you. And of course, as a parent, your job is to help that little creature find that center in themselves to know themselves, because you're not going to be with them everywhere as they grow. You know, my son is 20 now, and I'm watching him make choices I wouldn't make, but they're right for him because he knows himself, right? And I'm watching him make choices that I'm like, oh boy, I don't think that's, but I have to let him. Gotta let him fall.
Because you're not going to be that controlling parent. You're not going to be like, and I think this gets into the whole like reparenting, right? And how we as parents have to look at how we were raised, and that's what makes it so difficult is like we know we don't want to do impart that same system into our own kids, but sometimes it's like the default, and when you get worked up, you can't help it, right? It takes
Well,
so
you can't
much.
help, but it's a groove in your head. Like, it's literally just so fast. I mean, the trick is, and I have a special needs child, so it's especially challenging in terms of not wanting to help, not wanting, A, it's quicker to just do it myself, or B, I think he needs that support. But the truth is, whether the kid has special needs or not, you're kind of not teaching them that they're capable. If you do everything for them, you're basically telling them they're not capable, right? They're
And then they don't
not.
believe in themselves.
And then they don't believe in themselves. They're not centering in themselves. They don't feel safe within themselves. And then it just becomes a domino effect. And it's very, very challenging to do, to especially for me. I'm all, you know, always wanting to help my son, but I have to stand back and know. And my husband's very, very good at helping me do this. You know, let him do it. Let him do it. Let him fall. Let him fail, because he has to learn what failure feels like. It doesn't kill him, and he learns something. So if you're not allowing your child to fail, they're actually not learning the gift of failure. Right, they're not. Or if your kid feels something or you feel something and you're saying, I shouldn't feel that way, well, look at that word, shouldn't. You do. So why do you? So, for example, jealousy is a really beautiful emotion. We're told it's bad and you shouldn't feel jealous, but jealousy is just an indicator of what you want. It's telling you what you want. You something inside of there is something that you want, that you are not giving yourself, or you're not building a path towards, or you're not evolving to, or whatever it is. And it's a beautiful signal. And I really listen to it, because sometimes I don't know what I want. I get lost in all the day-to-day stuff and just, you know, get the kids to school, you know. But you got to get quiet sometimes when that pings, right? Like, I'm so jealous. And you think, I thought maybe I was jealous of her purse and her hair cut, but actually, I'm jealous that she's taking 20 minutes to sit down and have a cup of coffee. That's what I'm jealous about. Like, you have to really sit with it to allow it to really hear what is it that you're jealous of.
And I encourage that to the listeners on the podcast all the time. It's like you gotta hop off, this is what I call, I'm like, you gotta hop off that treadmill. As I call it, because as moms and women, we're just going, 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 going constantly. And we've got to give ourselves the gift of hopping off for a hot minute, whatever you need, and slow down, tune into yourself, and figure out what is it, what's going on right now, and what am I feeling, and why. And as I always say, it's never about the thing. Just like you said, it's not that pair of shoes, it's not that bag, it's the feeling behind it. So, like, let's dig a little deeper here. That's what we're really craving.
Right. Yeah. And you're craving either the, I mean, listen, sometimes it is a purse because it's like near
Maybe. Totally.
maybe,
And
but
totally.
yeah, normally there's something going on that you're feeling vulnerable about, and that feels like armor, you know? It feels like that's something that will give that to you. And it does for a while, you know? Listen, going to the Academy Awards is a blast. It's a blast to dress up and be people screaming and be in that room with all those fancy schmancy famous people. It's so much fun. But it's not gonna make you more valuable inside. Like, it's weird. Like, we think we have to get there, and then we'll know, and we'll be certain. And it's
Right.
like, we don't know.
Then we've got there. We've checked
Yeah.
that box and
There's
now we're
no
different.
there. There's no
It's
there
not
there.
there.
The there is more the work and the manifestation of those stories for me, right? In terms of being the conduit to these stories and allowing them to come out into the world and connect to people. That is more satisfying, which is just more about the work.
Yeah, it's the journey. It's the process of it, right? And that's what everyone says. Like you don't realize it until you're kind of in it because you keep thinking like, let me just hit that goal. Let me get there. Let me get there. But it's never about that. I say this all the time on the podcast. I used to run marathons. I haven't since I've had kids. It's been years, but I ran my first marathon. And I remember telling myself, if I could do this, like I signed up for it and saying, if I can do this, if I can finish this marathon, I will be the most confident, the strongest. I'll lose all this weight, right? I'll be in the best shape of my life. Like I'll be right. And, I ran it and it felt good. And then I wanted to run it again because I wanted to beat my time. It's like you're always in this competition. Like I feel like it was a dopamine hit for a little bit, but then it wears off, like that achievement wears off. So it's like now you're on to the next thing. Let me beat my time. Let me run another one. Let me get better and better and better. Right. So there's never a win. Like you never get there. You never get there.
Yeah, and some people, of course, approach that in such a more healthy way in terms of, you know, they enjoy it. And that's enough reason to do it,
Right,
right?
right.
So the goal is to do it and enjoy it. And I think that it's funny, right? Because it's not the thing, right? It's not purses or marathons. It's what you need them for.
It's the why. Absolutely. At
It's
the
not
it's
because,
yep.
listen, I love a beautiful purse, I love a good cookie. But if I'm using the cookie to medicate myself against the roiling vulnerability and shitty feeling and discomfort that I feel, then you have to say, well, I don't know about that. Is that maybe sit in the discomfort? Listen, I'm saying this like I can do it.
Yeah.
It's very hard to sit in discomfort, and know yourself, and what your fears are. And why do you know, because sometimes you get into things like, what is that voice in my head? Like, that voice that's telling me I'm not enough, let's just use that one because a lot of women have it. And then you have to think, who told me that? Who told me that I'm not enough? What did they get out of it? Because they probably did get something out of it. Now, that could be advertising because they're trying to sell you something. It could be your mother because there was a moment in her life where she unconsciously realized you were more powerful than her and you were braver than her. And
Own insecurities.
In order to not look at herself, she makes you small. And again, I don't even think it's conscious, but it's a survival
Totally.
technique coming over from the parent. But anybody who's asking you to be small, you need to look at that. You need to think about that. Now, you can make that choice. I'm never going to tell anybody what to choose, but I don't think anybody asking you to be small, you know, you're going to get into all those coping mechanisms, right? Because you're not small. You're powerful. And it takes a lot of energy to remain small. And it feels like pain. It feels like I'm not valuable. I have no worth. But what if it's the opposite? What if you are so powerful that you're taking all that energy and you're using that hammer in your head to keep you small? But it's not true. It's not true, and it's never been true. What's on the other side of not valuable is worth, but you already have it. Can you look at any child and say they don't have worth? Any child.
Right.
Oh, of course, they are born with it. It's just you went through something that asked you to give it up, that asked you to, it's that, forget give it up. It's in there, by the way. You're just spending a lot of time trying not to see it.
Yeah. No, you're so right. And again, I think there's that. piece, how we were raised, and we live still in this patriarchal culture that also tries to keep women small. Again, because I think
It can be
you know,
cultural, for sure. It can be
there's a
cultural, and
it's a
that's why we have
combination of all of
role
it.
models that don't subscribe, be it a character in a movie like Nora in Past Lives, or be it women in the real world who are out there not being small.
Yeah.
Does it come with some consequences? Maybe, but that's your choice, right? Those are the,
Yeah.
and everyone has the right to make those choices. As long
Absolutely.
as it's a conscious choice, right? It's
Yeah.
when it's unconscious. No. Go, let, make the conscious choice. Are you making this consciously?
Which is all about self-awareness. And we can't be self-aware if we're constantly, you know, again, people pleasing and doing everything for everybody else. And
You're
again.
not going to stop people pleasing or appeasing overnight. If you could even just, if you can just become aware of it, that it's happening, you don't have to change it, you don't have to do anything, just become aware of it in the moment. That even awareness will start to move deeper and start shifting things so that you can do other, make other choices. So sometimes it's just about awareness. And you know, I was in Greece with my sister because she was getting married there, and we went to an ancient tomb. It's one of the most ancient tombs in Greece. And it had perspective on the top, a painting in perspective, which they have no idea how they knew how to draw in perspective because it's not going to come for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And there's an inscription across the top of the tomb in Greek, obviously, and it says, "Know thyself." That is the most ancient wisdom.
I know. And
And
yet
that's, and you know,
it's not
well, because.
embarrassing to listen to, right? To actually implement in real life, but yeah.
Well, and you can find your own, you have to find your own instinct in terms of how to get there, and it can be baby steps. You know, this sounds crazy, but when I was on that treadmill and my kids were younger, I just decided that for 20 minutes a day, I was going to have a cup of tea and read my book because it fed me, and that's what I needed, and I needed to get quiet. Now, it would be better if it would have been meditation and self-reflective, but I didn't have the muscle for that, or the stamina or energy to do that.
Right.
In the cyclone, and just feeding yourself, feed yourself emotionally, spiritually when you can. And it can be tiny, small things that have very deep, big ripples and
Right.
impact on.
Right. It doesn't have to be this big. Again, it's like my whole beef with self-care. It's like our culture defines it as the bubble bath and the pedicure and stuff, but in my mind, it's not any of that. It's how we treat ourselves. And it doesn't have to be this big thing. It's how we internally talk to ourselves. It's self-compassion, honestly. It's treating ourselves kindly.
Self-compassion and knowing, okay, I need to take a walk 20 minutes every day and I don't have time and there's a never blah 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 blah.
Yep.
And sometimes I don't even want to go on the walk, but I know that I need to see the sky. I need to go out into nature, even if it's just around my block,
Yep.
because that helps calm my spirit and helps me
Yep.
connect back to the present moment versus the future or the past.
Mm-hmm.
It can be tiny, it, you know, just take tiny little things to know yourself. And you can get some pretty big shifts. Now, I'm a writer and I'm not teaching right now, but in the past when I taught, that's also a wonderful way to know yourself, of course, is to do something creative. I had a student once, and she was a mom, and I finally said, you realize, right, that all the men in these stories have the power and she's just reacting to everything. And she was like, what?
She
And I was
couldn't
like,
even see
well,
it.
she's a superhero, but she's not actually doing any of the plot. She's reacting to what the men are doing.
Yeah.
And it blew her mind to the point that she went home, cut her hair, did like all kinds of stuff because
Oh, wow.
it just solidified for her, oh, this is how I'm living my life. She was very brave in all the stuff she did after that. And I was not my intention. I was just talking about a story. But you know, you're any doing creative acts can also be so wonderful for knowing yourself. And they don't have to be good or great. Who cares? Just journal or write that short story or write that book or do that sculpture class or that painting class or that. And you know, let's find a babysitter. Like, that's the other thing. It's like,
Yeah.
I have friends and family who I'm like, I don't understand. I will send you from care.com the person who's going to come in. Look, they've been vetted. They got all these good reviews. They're 5 stars. They're $20 an hour. Go to your studio. Go to the class. Go. Oh, well, I can't because my husband earns the money and I shouldn't spend it. What
No,
are
no.
you talking about?
I know.
Well, and because I'm literally, I have one friend, I'm very worried about her. I'm very worried that she is getting hollowed out. She is, I don't, she's going to get sick.
Yeah.
She needs to take it. It's a, it, to me, it's almost a crisis level needs this. and that she won't spend the money. And I'm like, where you have the money? It's not, what are you going to spend it on? More kids shit at Target? Like, no, take the class. It might be fear of then I'll suck in the class, but then suck. Like, it's not about accomplishing anything in the class. It's not about proving anything or being good at it. Like, that is all just voices in your head to keep you small. You
It's
really have
about
to question those voices. They're not necessarily right.
That was a big thing for me when I started this podcast. I again, it was a creative outlet for me to learn more about myself. Because when I started it, we were like smack in the middle of the pandemic, and I was online shopping and spending money on things I didn't need, and I wasn't going anywhere, right? So why would I buy the pair of shoes that I am not even going to wear? But I've realized that again, if I'm doing this, somebody else out there must be too. And I wanted to share that experience because again, I like to feel validated, to feel seen, to know that I'm not alone. But it took a lot for me to actually take the steps to do it because I felt terrified. Like, well, what if people don't listen to it? What if people don't like it? But then I realized it's not about me. This isn't about me. This is about, I mean, as far as what people think about me, again, that's a tough thing, but it's about my own healing and working through this. And if three people listen to it and they hate it, who cares? This is my.
Or if three people listen and two hate it, but one person is moved and shifted, why isn't that enough? Like,
Yeah,
we
exactly.
all have this idea it has to be like 30,000 people, but it doesn't actually. The
Right.
ripples, you don't know. We did not make Inside Out thinking how much it was going to ripple around the world to the point that words in that movie are becoming part of the normal just human vernacular. Like, core memories is a thing now. Like, that's just something I was pitching in a room, right? Like, so you don't know, and you can't set out to do that. You have to set out to be honest and authentic with yourself, and it will ripple if you are honest and authentic in a moment, in a creative piece, however you can do it. And that thing we do, and a lot of women do it, that thing we do where our voice starts to, the voices in our head start telling us nobody's going to like it, and you shouldn't do it for this reason and that reason. And what about me? What about me? If you think about it, and I'm no psychiatrist, but it's kind of female narcissism.
Totally.
It all becomes about you. What if that isn't why you're doing it? Like, you're just doing it to honor yourself and what your authentic experience is, and that's enough. Like, that's all it has to be.
Exactly. It doesn't have, like, we turn it into so much bigger of a deal than it has to be, or than it even is intended to be, right? We just are using it as a very simple, honestly, healing tool. And in a way, that's not supposed to be selfish, but we're turning
Well,
it
and the
into
things that
it.
are authentic then do ripple. And if it's not authentic and you're just doing it to get the money or get the purse or whatever, they tend to backlash pretty hard. I'd
Absolutely.
also say, I talk about this when I teach, and it can be a topic that can get people a little bit riled. So I say it with respect. If you get riled, you can come find me and we'll talk about it. But so when people, not women, but when writers write women, often the women's power base is victimhood. And it just doesn't make a very interesting character. Now, I'm not saying people can't be victimized. That's a different situation. That is a situation. You are being victimized. That is a situation. But if the identity of the character, if their power base is victim, they have no agency, they don't take responsibility for anything, and their power is to point a finger, not stay inside their own self and their own power. It keeps giving away their power to other people, which is their power. And I don't know if you've ever encountered a friend or somebody who you start to realize they only know themselves as a victim. Even when life walks up and says, "Here, take the power, take the agency," they spend a lot of mental energy trying to shift it around to why it'll fuck up, Why, I'll just get screwed. It's just a scam. It'll never work out. Blah, 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 blah.
Someone else is to blame for all of my problems.
Always has a blame thing. And the truth is, it might not work out. It might fuck up, but that isn't part of that's just life.
Yeah.
That's trying to do anything. And there's gifts of gold inside of those fuck ups because they teach you something about yourself and then you move to the next. But if to only see it as a reason not to do something, as a reason to stay small, that's victim power. And I find it very, very destructive, especially towards the dreams and life you want to manifest.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's super addictive. It's
Yeah.
a psychological drug that is very hard to break, especially if you were taught it from your own parents who were constantly seeing how they were being victimized and everything. It also can have boomerang into, anger and rage and all kinds of stuff. But
Yeah. It's
I think
painful,
that's a,
though,
it's
to like look at it. It's easier to blame and project out into everybody else around you and the world around you than it is to look inside at what might potentially not be great with you or something, you know what
Yeah,
I mean?
because if
There's
you're blaming, you feel safe, right? Because I've identified it. It's a survival instinct. There's the danger over there. But what if you have to look at yourself and say, okay, well, I didn't actually, the truth is, I didn't even want this. So I'm not, shouldn't be surprised that it totally went off the rails because I didn't even want it. I didn't put much energy into it. I just kind of did it with my left hand because I didn't want to do it. But I said yes. Right? So you're not being victimized by that other mom at school. You didn't want to do it. And there's power in accepting that. So the next time you don't make that choice, and you can say to that, or that mom is really, overwhelmed and beyond herself. And you can just sit, do the bing bong thing and say, wow, you seem really overwhelmed. Are you okay? Versus all the victim stuff. And I hate her. And she's just like my mother. And blah, 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 blah. You're not present in the moment, right? To connect to that. It's hard to do all this stuff
Yes.
I'm talking about, but.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But that's the thing. I think in movies like Inside Out are paving the way for these kind of conversations to be happening earlier. And I just have to acknowledge that, you know, my kids in their elementary school are learning about social emotional. They're learning about things like this and having self-awareness around healthy coping strategies, healthy ways rather than disassociating or avoiding or whatever, like working towards this stuff. And I feel fortunate and I feel hopeful that things are going to change and they're this next
Because that's,
generation of kids
I'm so
is going
glad
to
to
be
hear
different.
that because real learning comes once you have the emotional intelligence in place.
Right.
It's very hard to learn anything if your emotions are all over the place and you don't know yourself, right? And you're disassociating. You're, what are you learning? You might be memorizing, but I don't know what you're learning.
Right.
So it, I'm so glad to hear that they're doing that in
Yeah,
schools.
it's incredible. And I think it's just such a good foundation that I wish I had as a kid. I mean, it's the world is changing and that's a good thing. And I think that's why when we watched Inside Out the other night with my kids, they especially my 7-year-old, he was just so much able to be like to tell me what was going on. I walked out of the room and I came back and I was like, oh, what did I miss? And he was like, well, sadness did this. And joy was trying to avoid sadness touching all the balls. And he was just so good. It was so clear that he could articulate what was going on. And he's
Well, I know
processing.
when they were in the early days, there was a real worry that kids wouldn't get it. So
Yeah.
they did a test screening when they brought kids in of the employees, and they did a little test screening of fear. I think it was fear of driving when Riley was on a high dive, but I could be wrong. The kids got it better than anybody else.
Yeah. Isn't
They
that
get
really
it because they're so much closer to the pureness of their emotions. They don't
right?
have a lot of intellect to talk themselves out of it or redo it or all the intellect stuff that we do to stay away from our emotions, that brain part of their brain hasn't developed yet, really.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
they're very, very pure in how they approach emotion. And it's funny when I went to see the movie. What's fun when you make a part of making a movie, you get to go to opening weekend and you just kind of go from theater to theater and see how people are liking the movie. And sometimes that's great when the movie's good, and sometimes it's very painful when the movie not. But when we worked very hard on, in a movie, you create poles for the story. So the poles for the story in Inside Out is Joy trying to keep sadness away from those core memories and off the controls. And then, and there were drawings of this in the room. And at the end, she's handing her the core memories and pushing her towards the controls, right? So there's the poles of Joy's character and the movie. And every time in boards, even when those blue, when she handed the memories over and they started turning blue, we would all get choked up. And we've seen it like hundreds of times, but that's how you know you have something, because you're getting choked up about it. And so I went on opening night, and when sadness handed the balls, I mean joy handed the balls over to sadness, this little girl in the back screams. And I thought, oh boy, they're gonna, I hope there's a conversation on the way home in the car about how she's feeling and what's going on with her. And it's such an opportunity to talk to your kid, not to talk them out of it. They open, they're going to open when they see movies like this to themselves. And you have a shot right now, the door is open. What's going on in there? Right? Because otherwise, especially by the time they're teenagers, you know, they close up. I mean, I did a lot of work with my kids when they were young to trust me that they could be any way they wanted with me. You know, you can call it a padded room or whatever. Like, I need a moment to just be however, so that when they're older and they are starting to get into trouble, they know that you are a safe space to come without judgment. Because if they think they're going to be judged, they're not coming.
And that's
And
the
it's very dangerous. I have to be honest with you. They're going to go to other kids, they're going to go to other adults, and you're not going to know what's going on. So this time when they're, you know, before 12 or whatever it is, this is the time when it's tiny, it's small problems. Like, it's a pain in your ass, I get that, but you got to find the room over that small problem that seems small to you, that is giant to them at that age, to just let them be in it, let them find capability of how to deal with it, let you be a sounding board without judgment, so that when it's bigger and they've had a car wreck or drugs or God knows what, they still know that they can come back to that space with you without judgment. It's super important for you to hold that space for them.
That's, I think, every parent's goal, right? Is to be that safe place forever for your kids, that they know that they always have you, no matter what. There's no conditions, right?
And it's hard to do because we do have
Yes.
conditions, right?
It's so hard.
And we're not, you know, gods, we're humans, and we got our own tapes in our heads. And, you know, trust me, by the time they're 20, they'll tell you what you taught them that you didn't realize you were teaching them. But I just find that base, you know, if they're not dissociating and they're coming to you, you're doing a good job. Listen, I had two boys. If at the end of the day they were alive, I was like, I've done my job.
That's that same with my two boys. I feel like
It's
that's
so beautiful.
the bare minimum. I know. It's not, parenting is not for the faint of heart. It is it's
No, it is a Zen exercise of who are you and how are you being the world. It's just constantly over and over
So I think this is a good segue. As kids are growing, what can you tell us, if anything, about Inside Out 2? As I know
and over.
Riley's
Well,
a
I can tell you,
teenager.
yes, Riley's a teenager and her anxiety has arrived, as we saw in the wonderful fun teaser. And that's pretty much all I can tell you know, because I'm signing a lot of paperwork, but you know, it was really, really fun and confronting in the best way to write anxiety, and to really, you know, all of us, all the creative people in the room, Kelsey Mann, who's the director and the editor and the head of story, and all of the incredibly key people involved in any storytelling and animation at Pixar, for us to really be honest and authentic about our own anxiety as it was when we were kids and as it was right there in the room. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like it goes away when you grow up. So it was a really wonderful, challenging experience to think about all the way anxiety works on us in our lives.
It's interesting. The older we get, the more complex the emotions feel and the more layered they are. I mean, I guess we also have a more of a history too, right? We have more of a past, more memories, core memories. And so it feels like it's kind of on top of each other right now. We've got to balance the anxiety with the fear, with the anger, with the everything, right? So, and it's, I guess, the importance here is being able to identify.
Just identify. You can just do that. That's a big, big step. It's a big piece of the power base, is to just say, oh, I'm really anxious right now, right? And then if you have any, you know, steps you do to say, well, it's not happening right now, right? I'm worried about it in the future and projecting in all the stuff that could go wrong, but it's not actually happening. Sometimes my husband has to say that to me because I have anxiety. He'll be like, it's not happening. I hear that you're anxious about that. And please talk about it, but it's not actually happening. I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right.
I am notorious for playing scenes in my head that haven't actually happened, but I think about how I will react when it happens, and it may not even happen, but I'm
It's
thinking
not,
about what I'm
odds are
what.
it's not going to happen.
No, and my, and I'm getting
It's
all
not going
worked
to
up
happen.
over it, and I'm like, and yeah, my husband's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, he's like, "That hasn't happened yet." And I'm like, "I know, but it might, and I have to plan for everything and think about it." And it's just,
And
it's.
you know what? Some of that is good. I mean, let's not be too black and white, because some of that planning has made me in my life what it is. And because I was thinking, wait a minute, what is she talking about my son this way? What is that? I have to go plan that. What is that definition of that disability? And I'm starting to do research. And part of it is anxiety and wanting to get control over it, right? But anxiety is also alerting me. Hey. Look over there. What other things would he need? What other things does California give you? Like, it becomes a very good practical thing of awareness that it's pushing me to be awake and do something about it. It's when I'm using it to avoid
That's when it doesn't help
or
anymore.
you know, like it's not, and this is why it's so beautiful. They're not good or bad necessarily. It's their intention. It's their what you're using it for. Right? Are you using it to wake up and to know yourself and to help and lay groundwork? Or are you using it to spin yourself out so you don't have to go?
Right. And again, that's a, I think, a fine line that not many people really know. Like, you don't know the answer to that, so you got to do
You
some
never
digging.
know until you're in it, because every day it changes.
Right, exactly.
Which we just go back to take a breath and be present
Yeah.
and know yourself and be like, oh yeah, I don't actually want to go to this party. And that's why I'm spinning out about who's going to be there. And does she even like me anymore? And isn't she still mad at me? No, I just actually am really, really tired. And all of those things might be happen, and I don't have the energy for it. And then somehow I can go to the party and I'm okay. It's weird, right? Like, if you can just know,
All the time, like the
that's all this is. And okay, anxiety. I got it. I got it. I understand what really I'm worried about. I'm not worried about all that other stuff. I'm actually worried about this, and I can handle that, right?
Yeah. Again, you're trying to protect me. You're trying to keep me safe. And that's with the best of intentions, but it doesn't always work out right the way that we want it to, because it's on us to manage it that way. But we tend to take it in the other direction.
Right, to protect ourselves.
Yeah, to protect ourselves. Exactly. Well, this has been such an incredible conversation. Thank you for all of your wisdom and insights. And before we
Thank
wrap up,
you.
yeah, I would just love to have you share with everyone, the listeners, how they can find you and listen to your
Yeah, the
podcast.
best. Yeah, I have a podcast called The Screenwriting Life. It's co-hosted with my friend Laurie McKenna. It's about writing, not just screenwriting. It's about all writing. Our specialty, of course, is screenwriting and writing for television. But I know novelists who listen, and actors who listen, and all different kinds of disciplines listen, because it's more about the act of creativity and like the stuff we're talking about, being present in your life, facing the hard stuff, and doing it anyways, and manifesting. And how do you do that? And we have some great guests on, and that get very honest, right, about the process of being creative and in the world. So I love that. And we have a Facebook page where a lot of support's going on there, and we talk to our friends and our listeners. And then if you are a writer and you're interested and you like the podcast, we also have a Patreon, because people asked us for more direct help. So twice a month we get on and listen to the stories and try to give people direct feedback. But that's really, if you're a writer, you don't need to be a writer to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I've listened to, I love the lava episode. That one
I guess we have a
specifically.
whole episode on lava.
Yeah, it's so, it's because again, it's so universal. It's, you know, working through that, the big, scary, fiery, you know, emotions that I think oftentimes scare me when they come up.
No, they do, and they're meant to, because they want you to back off, right? But the truth is that what you need is on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And that's the hero's journey, right? That
Yeah.
is the warrior's journey, to say, okay, that's pretty scary, but why don't I just stay here anyways and see what happens?
Yeah, because it's trying to tell you something.
Trying to tell you something very
Yeah.
important.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.